When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Monday, June 6th, the Please Sleep Through the Night edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I make a podcast called The Best Advice Show, and I live in Detroit with my family. My oldest Noah is 4, and my youngest Ami is 1.
My name is Jamila Lemieux. I'm a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 9, and we live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Shayna Roth. I'm a senior producer here at Slate. I have one daughter. She is 2. Her name is Eleanor. And like Zach, we also live in Michigan, only we're on the other side of the state in Grand Rapids.
There are a lot of challenges on this parenting journey, but perhaps one of the most pervasive is sleep, or the lack thereof. So we're dedicating an entire week to answering your sleep questions. Today we'll be joined by Dr. Erin Flynn Evans. She's worked in the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital for over 10 years, and she's the co-founder of Baby Sleep Science. But before we get into that, let's do a quick round of triumphs and fails. Shayna, as our guest co-host, you want to go first?
So as you can tell from my daughter's age, we had a COVID baby and she has not been to daycare and she's not going to go to daycare until she's vaccinated. So her social circle is ridiculously small and we've been very worried about her being around new people and how she would react to that and sort of being socialized in general. And over the weekend, my nephew had a graduation party and there were people there that either she didn't know or hadn't seen in over a year, and we were very worried about how she was going to react to all this. And she did great. She actually did really, really good. And I think part of that was that we talked about the party a bunch ahead of time. I had made her what I called a people book, where it was a bunch of pictures of different family members and friends, so she was a little bit familiar with what a lot of people looked like. We'd been having her practice saying, "Hi, I'm Elle," and want to play in sort of like mock situations of like, okay, you're at the playground and a kid comes up to you. What do you say? And I think that really helped get her ready for meeting new people. And she was a little quiet at first, but I mean, within a half hour, she was running around and sharing her Magna tiles and just having a really great time. So it was a win and a very much a big relief for us because we've been worried that our child has been way too sheltered for too long.
These kids, they learn quick, huh?
They do.
I'm happy for you. I can feel the relief there. Jamila, what's up on your end?
So I have a fail. Unfortunately, I can't get into too many details about the fail, but let's just say I said something crappy to my mom, who's visiting. She came out here as a favor to me. And, you know, my mom and I have an interesting relationship, but we had been doing pretty good for a while. You know, like we, and when I say interesting relationship, I mean, we bicker in the way that a lot of mothers and daughters do. It's a specific kind of bickering. But we've been doing okay for a while. And then, like, I ignored a number of little comments. I'm not going to say it's been like a perfect visit, but, you know, I said something and it was not nice. And I know I hurt her feelings. And I just feel really bad about it. And I, you know, like the older I get, the more like committed I am to like not arguing with my mom. I just feel like that's the last thing I want to do with my, you know, elderly mother. It's just a waste of our time together. And, you know, like, I just feel like a jerk about it. And so even though I've apologized, like, I'm just taking it as a fail because that's, you know, definitely a bleak moment in an otherwise really nice visit.
Have you acknowledged it to her?
Yeah, I apologized like immediately, you know, like it took a couple minutes and, you know, went and sat with her and immediately we talked about it. But I just feel like such a jerk for letting it happen, you know.
I hear you, but who gets on our nerves more than our parents? It's understandable.
Nobody.
And you apologized.
I did. It's just like you just sometimes become 17 again in their presence.
Absolutely.
You know, and like you have to control that urge, you know. It's hard when they're trying to parent you as if you're 17.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Yes. Well, I don't know what to call it. It's definitely not a triumph, what I will present. And I don't know if it's a fail either. It's an ongoing issue that Noah has been having at school where she's kind of looping on this thing And I don't know how frequently it's happening at school, if it's a recurring thing or if it happened once and she just can't get it out of her mind. But there's this one kid in her class in pre-K who seems like she's the cool kid. Like, it's amazing how early the stratification starts. This is me kind of projecting, perhaps, but it seems like the cool kid, you know, they play family a lot and they always make Noah be the baby. Because, like, it's a 4-year-old class and a 5-year-old class, and Noah's one of the younger kids in the class. And not only do they often make Noah be the baby and perhaps not allow her to be, like, the parent, but they also, like, hold her on their lap. And, like, even if she wants to go play with other kids, she says that this one kid is, like, holding her against her will. And that makes me very, you know, uncomfortable and sad. And I was so sorry to hear that that was happening. So, I mean, we emailed her teacher and made her teacher aware of it. And she's talking about it a lot. And, you know, we've told her you can go to the teachers, you can ask for space. There's this great Daniel Tiger song that Noah learned about, like, asking for space when you don't want to be around people. She sung it to this girl who may not be familiar with Daniel Tiger, so it didn't really click. So she's trying, but this seems like a real pre-K power struggle. And my parental impulse is to, like, you know, go and, like, talk to this girl, which obviously I'm not going to do. But it's an opportunity for Noah to try to articulate how she's feeling. And I think she's done a really good job of this, but I would hate for it just to be ongoing. But I know now her teachers are aware of it. And I just want my baby to feel comfortable at school.
Jump on their feet, Noah. Somebody puts you on their lap against your will. Jump on their feet and land as hard as you can.
You hear what Auntie Jamila's saying, Noah?
All you were doing was getting up. That's not your fault if their little feet are hurt.
I endorse that. Or yell fire, just really loud, just cause total chaos, and then maybe everybody will make a stop.
You can scream when somebody's holding you against your will. You are allowed to scream at the top of your lungs. You can say, "Get off of me!" Like, you're allowed, like you're being physically violated. This is your scream window.
You're absolutely right. And there's only a week of school left, but doesn't make this any less relevant in her heart right now. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into your sleep questions.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
We are back and delighted to be joined by Dr. Erin Flynn Evans. Dr. Flynn Evans, could you tell us a little bit about your work?
I am a sleep researcher. I'm a circadian physiologist, which means that I study the body clock that tells our body when to be awake and when to sleep. And I am one of the co-founders of Baby Sleep Science.
Why did you do this with your life? I feel like, you know, every parent wants to talk to you. How did you go down this path?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I started before I became a parent, amazingly enough. And I always thought sleep was sort of interesting. And I, you know, as many people do, kind of fumbling around after I graduated from college, found myself working in a sleep lab and really loved it. And then from there, went on to graduate school to study sleep. And, you know, the rest is history. But on the baby and child sleep side, just as you said, I had my own child and was doing parenting classes, as many of us do. And I found that I couldn't leave these classes at the end because once I said that I studied sleep, every parent would come and corner me at the end. And so from there, it seemed like there was a real need to share credible information with parents. And so that's how Baby Sleep Science was born.
Can I just say I'm a contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column. And sleep is like one of the few subjects I just refuse to touch because I feel so clueless and so lost. So I'm very excited to have you here. And I think the majority of parents would agree with you when it comes to sleep.
Thank you. Yeah, it's one of those things that seems like it shouldn't be very complicated, but then once you're in the thick of it, it's amazingly complicated.
Let's just do a quick go around and say what time our kids woke up today.
My daughter woke up today at 6:35-ish, somewhere between 6:30 and 6:35. So she actually woke up on time. She usually wakes up before me, but she stayed up a little late last night and I was able to get her up on time.
I think this morning Elle woke up around 6:15, but lately she's been getting up at like 5:30 or somewhere between 5:30 and 6:30. It's not great.
How about you, Dr. Flynn Evans?
Well, I now have a teenager and a preteen, and so they reluctantly rolled out of bed at about 7:15 when I woke them up.
My one-year-old woke up at 5:30 today, but then he came back to bed with me and slept till 7, which was a joy, and then Noah, my four-year-old, slept until 8. Yeah, so the time between the first wake-up and the last wake-up is just, it's too much. But anyways, maybe we'll get to that. Let's get to our first listener question.
Dear Mom and Dad, how can I get my 2.5-year-old and 7-month-old to sleep at night? My toddler has been in a bed for about a year now. A few months ago, he figured out he could get out of the bed, and we've had a terrible time since. He tries all kinds of things to get out of his bed. I need more water. I need to blow my nose. I want my daddy. I didn't kiss my brother goodnight. Plus, he's figured out that his dad and I go downstairs and watch TV after he's in bed. So if I leave his room and tell him to stay put, he'll end up downstairs begging to watch a mama and daddy show. We've had a fairly consistent bedtime routine. He doesn't seem that tired anymore, so we tried putting him to bed later. It doesn't seem to make a difference. I hate the idea of locking him in his room, and since the bedrooms in our house are all right together, locking him in and letting him scream and wreak havoc runs the risk that he'll wake up his baby brother, who would then have a hard time going back to sleep. What can we do? Trying to get back on track.
So that is a very common problem. I'm sure a lot of parents can relate. And there's some toddler FOMO going on there too, which is also pretty common. But actually, this is the type of issue that's largely rooted in biology. So it might seem like it's just a behavioral issue, you know, a toddler who just doesn't want to comply with rules, which that is a whole other can of worms. But at around 2.5, having a nap is really important, but it also kind of acts like caffeine. And so when children have a nap, say, you know, a couple hours in the afternoon, that's just going to steal from their ability to go to sleep at a reasonable hour. And so while theoretically it would be okay to say have a toddler nap from 1 to 3 in the afternoon and then go to bed at 9 p.m., for most parents, that's just completely too late. And so the first thing that I would do is just look at that nap schedule and look at the timing of sleep relative to that nap, because toddlers are going to need about 6 hours between the end of that nap and bedtime. And then if you imagine a typical toddler needing around 11 to 12 hours of sleep overnight, you have to kind of think about, okay, if my child's getting 2 hours sleep during the nap, then that really only leaves 9 hours, maybe 10 for overnight sleep. And so you have to consider all of those pieces together. And then once you have that figured out, that might mean that you need to shorten your toddler's nap, maybe make it a little earlier, maybe make bedtime a little later, or a combination of all of those things. Then you can work on the behavioral issues, because the behavior issues sometimes linger even after the biological pieces are fixed. And so in that regard, the best thing that you can do as a parent is just be as boring as possible. And so you don't want to make it exciting. You want to really dampen that toddler FOMO. And so that doesn't mean that you have to sit in the dark or go to bed at 8 o'clock every night. But what you should do in problem solving is have a mantra that you say, like, it's nighttime, time to sleep, let's get in your bed, walk your child back. You don't want to engage. You don't want to have anything exciting happening. You want to make it so that your child understands oh, if I get out of bed, this actually isn't very exciting. If I don't have a problem, my parents are just, you know, telling me to get back in bed without any excitement or drama. And that really dampens all of the issues that drive these toddler issues and the getting out of bed over and over. So that's what I would suggest for toddler, just really looking at the biology, looking at the timing of the nap and bedtime, and then working on the behavioral issues.
Are naps necessary? Or are they necessary every day?
So typically we recommend that toddlers should have a nap until at least age 3. It doesn't have to be a marathon nap, though. It could just be a nap of, say, 20 or 30 minutes, just enough to sort of get by, get through the day in good form. And there's actually been some really cool research on this. So Dr. Monique Labourgeois, who is at the University of Colorado, did a study looking at 2.5-year-olds. And in one condition, they had a nap. In another condition, they didn't have a nap. And then after this afternoon, you know, nap or no nap, they were given a little peg puzzle, but one of the pieces didn't fit. And the toddlers who had naps would ask an adult for help and would be much more engaged about solving this problem. The toddlers who didn't have a nap would tantrum and throw the piece that didn't fit and would just have a really difficult time with emotion regulation. So while napping can be really frustrating and can cause, you know, like late bedtimes, generally it's better to keep the nap until a child shows readiness to drop it than to try to drop it too early.
Should we move on to the next question?
Okay. The listeners have similarly aged kids but are now wondering about themselves.
Dear Mom and Dad, my wife and I have twins that are almost 3. We also just added a new baby to the mix and oh boy, are we tired. The girls are early birds, and the baby is still feeding at night. It gets even more fun when the baby wakes up the girls. I know we're lucky to have each other, as we're trying to manage nap time and bedtime, but sometimes it feels like we're puttering on empty. Do you have any tips for adjusting our own sleep schedule, or how to function on very little sleep? Thanks. Desperate for more than a wink of sleep.
Every listener is leaning in so close to the speaker right now. This is what we've all been waiting for.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no, I can sympathize and I've been there, but not with twins. So I think our listener really has a, you know, deserves a special prize for surviving with twins and a newborn. So I guess the first thing to know is, you know, sleep is really the answer. And so the more that you can divide and conquer as parents, the better. It's, you know, really important, I think, to just sort of preset shifts like, okay, you know, if the baby's up between, you know, say 7 and midnight, this parent's on. And if the, you know, baby's up after that, then the other parent's on. Maybe the parent who's having protected sleep is sleeping in a separate room temporarily just during this difficult phase so that each parent gets some protected amount of time for sleep. So that's really at the core, the best thing that you can do. Similarly, during the day, having naps and protecting each other's time for naps is a really good idea. And so it's not so simple to just say, oh, sleep when your baby sleeps. And particularly when you have 3-year-old twins and a baby, you're probably not going to find a time when everybody's sleeping. But, you know, maybe one parent takes the kids to the park while baby takes a nap in the stroller while the other parent gets to take a nap at home. And so these are, you know, really important survival techniques. And the other thing that I would say is it takes a village, you know, use friends, relatives, anybody who's willing to pitch in and help. Let them take your kids to the park. Let them, you know, come over and watch the kids so that you can just have a sleep staycation for a night or even just for an afternoon. So that's going to be key. There are other of what we would call fatigue countermeasures that can help you stay awake when you're pretty sleepy, but you have to be really careful in how you use them. So of course, caffeine is one, but with breastfeeding, you know, I'd be really careful about using caffeine in the, you know, afternoon, evening, and night for a baby. So limit that caffeine use to the morning. Also bright light. So the more that you're outside and exposed to bright light, the more alert you'll feel. Light is what resets our circadian rhythm or our internal clock, and just being in a very bright environment will make you feel more awake. So the more time you can spend outside, the better.
I'm curious about naps for adults. Is there like an ideal like amount of time that will that like you'll get the most out of? Because sometimes I feel like if I nap too long, I wake up and I'm just groggy the rest of the day. Is it Are power naps really a thing? What's the ideal that they should be trying to carve out for themselves?
So having a long nap means you're going to be more likely to go into deeper sleep, and that's going to increase the burden of sleep inertia that you feel. And sleep inertia is just that grogginess that you feel upon waking. So sleep inertia happens when you wake up from any stage of sleep, but when you wake up from deep sleep, you can feel really disoriented. And anybody who has a toddler knows this, because if you've ever woken up, say, a 2 or 3 year old from an afternoon nap, it almost feels like the nap wasn't worth it in the first place. But the same thing happens for adults. So if you have the time for a 2 or 3 hour nap, I would say it's worth it. Take the long nap, get that, you know, bump in your sleep, you know, meter. But if you don't have a lot of time, then taking a power nap of 20 or 30 minutes is a great idea. And then there's this cool technique called like the nappuccino, where caffeine doesn't kick in for 20 or 30 minutes. And so if you have some caffeine and then you take a nap, it really minimizes that burden of sleep inertia when you wake up. Yeah. And so you can feel really refreshed all at once.
I've heard that many times, and I thought it was just one of those, you know, things that people believe, but I didn't know that that was really a thing. I've tried it. It seems to maybe hold up. But anyway, we're moving on up in age, and we have a seasonally appropriate question.
Dear Mom and Dad, my 10-year-old is heading to overnight camp this summer, and I'm thrilled for him. He's a real homebody and isn't a great sleeper at home. He'll be in a small cabin with other kiddos. How can I prepare him? I absolutely loved camp, but had a really hard time sleeping when I was bunked with other people. I want him to be ready, but not fixate on the sleeping arrangements. I also don't want to project my own history of discomfort. Does anyone have any good tips? It goes without saying that if he wants to bail out partway, I'll totally come and get him. Signed, Cabin Mate Conundrum.
Oh boy. Well, I can also relate to this one as someone who has an 11-year-old going to camp for the first time this year. So yeah, what a wonderful experience. So I think the big takeaway here is that sleep hygiene, which is just the practice of having a regular bedtime ritual, having an appropriate sleep environment that's, you know, cool, dark, quiet with appropriate bedding, is important away just as it is at home. And so what I would recommend, of course, there's not going to be a perfect sleep environment at camp. There will be noises, there will be kids, there will be all kinds of things happening. But to the extent that you can, try to begin some rituals at home to help your child begin to cope, just to begin to have like skills that can help him self-soothe while he's away. And that sounds funny because that's a term that we often use for babies and toddlers. But older children and teenagers and even adults benefit from having a regular routine. So maybe you're giving your child some opportunity to read a little bit before bed. And maybe you send a nightlight with a special book along to camp so that your child can have a little bit of reading time before going to sleep. Maybe you work on some, you know, breathing exercises. Maybe you work on just sort of mentally working through the day before bed. And the more you can do that before your child goes to camp, the easier it will be to translate that to that unfamiliar environment. And then I would also recommend just making sure that, you know, that camp like setup is appropriate with a nice sleeping bag, nice pillow. I mean, comfort matters even when camping. And so the more that you can set your child up with an environment that is conducive to sleep, the better. And then lastly, I would just practice at home. So if you don't have a backyard, set up a tent in the living room, because even though that's not going to be reflective of the exact experience that a child will have at camp, it'll be just, you know, shifting the norm. It'll be bringing your child out of his or her comfort zone to have an experience sleeping in an unfamiliar place. And having that adaptation should help ease that transition to camp.
Well, Dr. Erin Flynn Evans, this has been a real treat. It's been enlightening. And thank you so much. This has been great. We will put a link to learn more about Dr. Erin Flynn Evans' work in our show notes.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically,
which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, it's time for recommendations. Jamila, what do you got?
There is a really interesting article in the New York Times this week. They surveyed 362 school counselors on how children are developing since the beginning of the pandemic. And what they are reporting looks bleak. And it also looks very on par with what I've heard from other parents and from what I'm experiencing to some extent in my own household. So I wanted to suggest it for folks to read it and for you guys to read it and for listeners who may be interested in sharing some feedback. The biggest thing that struck me is the idea that essentially a lot of children remain where they were developmentally at the beginning of the pandemic when things were last normal, quote unquote, for them. So if you had a 6-year-old at the beginning of the pandemic, you have a 9-year-old now that may be acting like a 6-year-old in certain ways or have some of the, you know, emotional behaviors of a 6-year-old. And so, you know, other things have been said about pandemic smaller children, right? That the babies are advancing faster because they're spending more one-on-one time with their parents. But I guess for older children, they're showing signs of wear. So anyway, I would love to hear from you guys. And is that a common experience amongst you all as well? I'm certain that the results of the study were not a fluke and this is what we're all dealing with. But would love to hear from other parents about this. So we'll link to it in the show notes and it's in the New York Times.
Man, I just clicked over to it. That first quote that they have says a lot, maybe says it all. Kids have the highest level of anxiety I've ever seen. Anxiety about basic safety and fear of what could happen. A harrowing but necessary read, it seems. Thanks, Jamila. Shayna, what about you?
So keeping with the sleep theme, I wanted to share a book that was gifted to us before Elle was born. It's called The Happiest Baby on the Block. It's by Dr. Harvey Karp. And this is really the thing that saved us when Elle was born, because she was born smack in the middle of the pandemic. We had nobody to help us. We knew that sleep was going to be incredibly important because we were going to be working from home with no help with a newborn. And after going through a ton of different books, I remembered that my good friend Libby gave us this one and recommended it highly. And it's great. It helps you feel a little bit more empowered over your kid's sleep than a lot of other books. There's less fear-mongering in this book than some other books I've read. And it gives you really good tips and tricks and helpful ways to establish a good sleep routine for your baby. And I can't recommend it enough. I've given it to new parents as I find them. I also really think that this book is the reason why our daughter started sleeping completely through the night at about 3 months old. It was really helpful to just have like a set, not curriculum, but like a set list of things to do to get her into sleep mode. And we learned just sort of how to stick with it, do these things faithfully. And within 3 months, she was sleeping through the night. So I think that's a lot of parents' dreams. And we were able to live that in large part because of this book.
I also have a couple sleep recommendations. The first of which is, you know, we all have, or a lot of us have, like the noise machines for our kids, white noise or whatever they prefer, like the lullaby. I have that for Ami, my son, but I also downloaded the white noise app for my wife and I. So when he's crying, we can drown him out with white noise. So white noise isn't just for babies. It's also for adults who are trying to get their kid to cry it out. We use it more often than I would like. It's free. It's helpful. And my other one is, have you all heard of the Nap Ministry? It's an amazing thing started by this woman, Trisha Hersey. Actually, the most recent Instagram post kind of describes their project really well. And I think they're worth checking out. They're worth following on social media. But they wrote back in 2017, "The Nap Ministry is a meditation on naps as resistance, an artistic and spiritual examination on the liberating power of naps. It reimagines why rest is a form of resistance and shines a light on the issue of sleep deprivation as a justice issue. It is a counter-narrative to the belief that we are all not doing enough and should be doing more." So before we take a nap, I just want to thank you all for listening. We will be back in your feeds on Thursday for part two of Sleep Week, where we'll be joined by another expert. So subscribe to the show so you don't miss it. And if you rely on the show for parenting advice, consider signing up for Slate Plus. It's the best way to support this show. Members will never hear another ad on any other Slate podcast. To sign up now, go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Again, that's slate.com/momanddadplus. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Jasmine Ellis. For Jamila Lemieux and Shayna Roth, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening.